Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
So we'll be starting in a few minutes, but in the meantime, if you can make sure you type present plus, that's present and the symbol plus in the IRC, it will make sure that you are listed in the attendee list. Also, while we are waiting, if there's anyone who would like to volunteer to be a scribe today, please speak up. Good morning, everybody. If you would please type present plus when you arrive in the IRC channel, it will make sure you are listed as an attendee. Also, if you can please mute while you're not in conversation, I'm getting some feedback or noise or something on the channel. Either that or a really bad call. Ori, we might be able to bring that up at the end of the day, but otherwise we may need to schedule in a future call. If anyone is interested in being volunteering to be a scribe today, that would be appreciated and speed up our process. We're going to wait for just one more minute. So I put the agenda into the IRC channel. The topic name has been changed. Okay, let's go ahead and begin. This is our W3C Credentials Community Group call, which we do almost every week. Agenda today is to review begin to review some CG work item reports. An IP note before we begin, anyone can participate in these calls. However, any substantial contributions to CCG work items must be members of the community group with IPR assignments signed. This is the place where you can join the group. Basically, it asks you, among other things, to sign this very simple contributor license agreement that basically allows and protects everybody as we are creating our standards. These calls are archived both in the minutes that are captured in the IRC channel and an audio recording of everything that is said. So be aware of that and act accordingly. We use IRC to queue speakers and the minutes. If you're not already on IRC, please join us either through the web portal or other client. If you can't, you're on a remote phone connection, then please speak up and let us know if you want to be on the queue. So all attendees should type present plus to get on the attendee list. As I just said, you can type Q plus to add yourself to a question queue. There is an optional reminder to help remind you what it is you wanted to speak about, because sometimes it might be a while before you get to speak. So you can say Q plus to mention, so that's Q-U-S-T-O, and then you can just write whatever you want after that, and it will be stored. Please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. A note, this meeting is primarily held by voice. IRC is to be a support for things like URLs and other details. Thus, off-topic IRC conversations are subject to deletion from record. We really work hard to maintain a single thread of conversation so that everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. We need a scribe. We have this scribe, handy dandy scribe list, which often doesn't work as well as we like, but I'm going to throw it out anyhow. So I see at the top of the list, Jeff Orgel and Ganesh. Are either of you here today?
This is Jeff. I am here, and unfortunately, my lifestyle during these calls does not permit direct attention. I apologize.
Okay.
It is a
Ganesh?
Business lifestyle, by the way. My apologies.
Ganesh? Michael Casaldi? Moses Ma? Chris Wasensky?
Hey, Christopher, this is Chris. I can do it.
That'd be great. So if you can type scribe and your handle, that will get the process started. Is that the way it works? I thought it was...
I'll try them all, Christopher.
Okay. So next is introductions and reintroductions. First off, is there anybody new to the call today or hasn't introduced themselves in a past call? Either speak up or type Q+.
Hi, I'm David Mason. I'm in the Government of Canada.
Thank you. Do you want to say a little bit about what you're doing and what brings you here today?
Well, I'm just tracking all of this activity, basically, trying to find out what's relevant for our project.
Great. Thank you.
Perfect.
Thank you for joining us. Anyone else? Okay. So we'll move on to the next agenda item. So we use the community group's issue repository introductions. We have to do announcements and reminders, excuse me. We basically keep a web page of announcements. We welcome PR requests for appropriate items in there. So in the upcoming meetings, we had a Rebooting Web of Trust, which is a twice a year event, be canceled because of COVID-19. There's a link there to virtual event options if people are interested in using some of that time that they were planning on going to Rebooting to work on items together or a virtual hackathon or whatever. We have not made a formal decision of how much support the Rebooting team can give to that virtual hackathon yet. We're really kind of waiting to see who's interested in doing it that week. We've had a few replies on our virtual event options. On the 5th of April is No Identity in Las Vegas, and there'll be a number of people there unless it also is canceled because of COVID. At the end of April, there is the Internet Identity Workshop. No Identity is also canceled. Dan, is there still a plan for the W3C DID Working Group to meet at Internet Identity Workshop at the end of April?
No, that actually has not gone anywhere in particular. There isn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So we haven't
okay,
had any real discussions about it. Yep.
Okay. Hopefully by that time we will be past the COVID scares and such. But right now the IIW, I believe, is still scheduled. And then in June is Identiverse in Denver. We have two recurring meetings of task forces. There's the Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force, which meets on Mondays. There's a meeting page, which unfortunately is not a link for some reason on that announcements. I'll fix that later. They meet at 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is 11 o'clock Eastern on Mondays. The other one is the DID resolution calls. This task force meets on Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m., which is 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. And there's a meeting room and a Zoom that they use. And they have regular details of how they work. Any other announcements? Chris, did you want to add any more details?
I just wanted to clarify that I was scribing that I thought I heard you say no identity was canceled. I was not saying that it was canceled.
Oh. Oh,
so if there's confusion, that wasn't authoritative.
Got it. Yep. I misread that. Okay. Yep, you scribed correctly. moving on. So we manage also, and again, if anybody needs to, make a change to announcements, such as they discover something is canceled or whatever, we can always accept a PR request to the announcements and reminders repo. We also use the community repo for action items. And there's a particular tag that we use for action items we want to cover each week. And this week there's only one, which is about closing the digital verification community group. Some context here is that the community group was formed with the idea of having more cryptographers and more security people there. That never really happened. So we've largely been running that community group just as kind of a task force out of the community group, and it's not really working to have it as a separate repo. So there's begun to be a process of moving the active item there into the community group and into this community group, web pages and places. But we still haven't completely closed things. So Dimitri, I know you've been doing some stuff lately, and I don't know who else. Ori said he was interested. What else do we need to do and what help is needed to kind of finish closing this sort of deprecated community group?
Right. So we're just about taking the last steps, actually, this morning. So we moved all of the relevant repositories to the community group. The linked data signature spec is being merged into the linked data proof spec while preserving history and all that. And then the last bits that we're finishing up on is redirects for the GitHub I/O pages need to be set up. So when you move a repository in GitHub, it automatically sets up redirects for the repository link, but does not, sadly, set up redirects for the I/O version. So that,
okay.
Yeah, so when people go to the HTML rendered version of the spec, it just 404s. So we're adding a redirect for those HTML documents to the new specs.
Okay.
But aside from that, it should all be set.
Okay. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, so it would be great to have a list of the repos that have been abandoned. So one of them that surprised me, Chris, you and I talked about it, the redaction suite.
Yeah.
So there may be some that didn't fit Dimitri's judgment, and I'm not questioning that judgment at all. I think the ones I looked at had active activities, and the ones that weren't did not. So I think you did it right, but I want to make sure folks care about the ones that are left over. They get an opportunity to fork them and keep them going, and if they want to.
Exactly. So, for instance, the redaction suite has some data minimization capabilities that the others don't, but, you know, it was dependent on another suite, so we didn't move that forward. Anyhow, so if you're interested in any of those unforwarded into the CCG group items, you know, please make sure you fork them into your own repos. Let's see, moving on. Obviously, the you know, there is also a digital verification homepage that needs to be changed, and items redirected to the CCG group rather than VVCG. There's also a W3C page that needs updates. I'll take care of that one. And then we need to formally close it, and the chairs will take that one. But, you know, there are little details remaining. Let's see, Q. Okay. Any questions in regards to the closure of DVCG? And if you do any work on it or, you know, have any progress reports or whatever, if you'd please, you know, detail things on that on issue 105 until we can completely close this issue. That's the only one today. You know, we welcome people adding issues, even issues like, I'd like to be able to speak or give a report about X. Basically, every Thursday, the chairs look at all the issues and decide which ones we want to focus on in the next week. So it's a good way to, you know, to get on our agenda. Continuing on, at least once a month, we want to have a call regarding our community work items. So this is the official list of the work items, which still needs a little work and updates. I mean, it has at the top the things we've done already. But then we have our task forces, our ongoing community drafts and reports, and various informal activities, et cetera. You will notice that a lot of them are haven't been updated in a while, so we would really like to either you know, keep them updated, or if they're not going to finish or if they've kind of languished, we need to know what to do, assign new editors, et cetera. Right now, we're not going to go over that list in whole. We are going to start just with the a report from the Resolver Task Force. So a Resolver Task Force, to recap, meets on Thursdays, and is, you know, they'll tell you what's going on. So Marcus, are you here? I'm looking in the... Marcus, are you here today? We had checked with him, and we were going to...
Don't know.
So who's... I forgot. Who's the other... the other chair of the group? Oops. Chris needs someone else to scribe for 5 minutes. Kim can. Thank you. I'm sorry. Is there someone else from the Resolver Task Force that can tell us a little bit about the last couple of weeks and how things are going? And
sure. I can say a couple of words. This is Dimitri for the scribe. So...
Well, Kim said that she was going to do it.
Oh, okay. Yep. Go ahead, Kim, please.
And, I think Kim was scribing for Chris.
Yeah. Okay. Here's Marcus.
Chris, Dimitri is involved in the task force. Those are two different tasks.
Okay.
One was the scribe. Dimitri was offering to help give us
okay.
an update.
Well, the good news is that Marcus just popped in. So as soon as his voice So Marcus, we were just starting your part of the discussion. So do you want to give us a little detail on what's been happening in the last month since you gave a public report out to the community group of what's going on?
Yes, so I'd like to apologize for being late in the call. I had some connectivity and audio problems. Basically, since the last status update, we haven't really added much or worked much on the actual the resolution spec content. The reason is basically there are several dependencies now on decisions that are being made in the DIT working group. So in general, the DIT resolution work is very closely aligned or dependent on the DIT core specification. Some of those topics that are being discussed and decided right now are number one, support for multiple representations of a DIT document. So the DIT working group has decided that there will be an abstract data model for DIT documents, and then there will be multiple representations or formats or encodings. For example, JSON-LD, which we've had so far, or a plain JSON format, or a CBOR format, or even an XML format that has that affects DIT resolution, because there are many questions related to how a resolver would work and which one of the representations a resolver would return, and how a client could request a certain representation. So that's one topic. A second topic is matrix parameters, which are currently a syntax component of DIT URLs. And so matrix parameters are a way of passing information or parameters to the DIT URL dereferencing process, which is in scope for the resolution specification. But in the DIT working group, there is some discussion whether that feature should be removed from DIT URL syntax, and another mechanism such as query parameters would be used instead. So depending on what the decision there will be there, that also affects the DIT resolution work. And maybe the third major topic is metadata. So right now in the DIT resolution specification, we're defining a data structure called the DIT resolution result, which contains a DIT document, but also contains metadata about the DIT document, about the DIT resolution process. And in the DIT working group, there's some discussion on what kinds of metadata should be supported, and also what types or what categories of metadata there should be. So for example, there could be two or more different categories of metadata. There could be metadata about the DIT document, and there could be metadata about one specific DIT resolution process. And that's being actively discussed right now. One example that we sometimes use in these discussions is a property called created. So if you have a property in the DIT document or in the DIT resolution result or both that's called created, then what do you really mean by that? Do you mean when was the DIT subject created, like when was a person born, for example? Or do you mean when was the DIT document created by the controller? Or do you mean when was the DIT document created and registered by the DIT method? Or do you mean when was the DIT document created during one concrete resolution process by a resolver? So there are many different nuances, and there's not yet common understanding in the working groups. So right now, these two topics, matrix parameters and metadata, are under active discussion, whereas the first one I mentioned, the one about different representations, has been more or less decided, but the details are still being worked out, okay. And all of that has some impacts on the DIT resolution work.
So one of the reasons why the DID resolution task force is part of the community group is that it was not initially a work item of the DID working group itself. So I heard that some discussion about the possibility of it being formally moved into the working group. Is that under discussion, or what are the thoughts there? I mean, clearly they influence each other, but you know, what's the future?
So there's pretty strong support that some of what has currently been in scope for the data resolution work item would become part of the DID core specification, specifically what Justin always refers to as the contract, or what is the interface between a DID and the DID document, or a DID URL and the dereferencing result. What are the inputs and outputs when you pass a DID URL to a resolver, and what is it that you can get back as a result, and what options can be passed and all of that, and that's currently in the DID resolution specification, but there's pretty strong support that at least this interface will be moved into the DID core specification, and then all the implementation details that would continue to be in the DID resolution spec. So that will definitely not go away. And there is also still the idea that the DID resolution spec itself, even though it will continue to exist, may be moved also into the working group, not on a standards track, but as a note, I think, that the working group could publish. That has not been decided yet, but the first part of what I talked about to define the contract or the interface for resolution, to add that to DID core spec in the working group, that's been, I think my sense is that there's strong support for that, and that will happen.
Okay. And any plans for the next couple of weeks of Thursdays of what you're going to be talking about?
I think I haven't thought about it yet. I also like to discuss with Dimitri. I think the focus will be to work out on exactly what this interface is and what the boundary is, or what content we can reuse that we have in the DID resolution spec right now that we can potentially move into the DID core specification, and exactly what would be the boundary between the interface in DID core and the implementation details in DID resolution. I think we'll probably focus on that and continue to monitor the other open topics like the matrix parameters and metadata, but that will likely take some more time.
Thank you. Dimitri?
One thing I wanted to add that was the subject of discussion of a couple of calls on the resolution group is a discussion around whether or not the DID subject, the ID attribute of the DID document, is allowed to have path components, query components, or fragment components. Where that is immediately relevant is in the DID web method. Specifically, several of the implementers were asking, are we allowed to have multiple different DID documents on different paths of a website? Right, for example, if it's a university website and they're giving their users, their students storage, and can the students host their DID documents with example:university.edu/username, right? Now, whether or not that's a good security practice, it's not, is a separate issue. The issue that we've been discussing on the calls is that legal in the syntax of the DID document, and specifically the DID subject?
Okay. So just as a note for the rest of the community, the DID working group it requires actual membership in the W3C to be able to fully participate. They'll take inputs and such, but to be able to propose anything technically to DIDs, you have to do it with the as a DID, as a W3C member. But the DID resolution task force, because it's part of the community group, only requires the free membership in the community group. So if you're interested in kind of supporting DIDs and such and are not part of the working group because of costs or other things, please participate in these Thursday meetings and bring your input there. You still have to be a member of the CCG to protect IPR, but there isn't there aren't any fees associated with it. So it's a great way to move forward things there. Okay, so I don't see anything else in the queue. So, Ori, you had said you wanted to talk about some of the other work items that we've started. I think DID Web was one of them, but I forgot what the other is. Ori, go ahead.
Yeah. So we have a couple work items for like DidKey and for WebKMS where the primary specification material is hosted under Digital Bazaar organization repos. And we have the CCG repo up for that work item, but it's like empty basically. And so one fear that I have is that people will continue to contribute to the Digital Bazaar repos, and then we have to move them at some point. We have to sort of get things into one place so that we can encourage more active contribution. So the reason I wanted to bring these things up is I'm very interested in sort of moving did method key like along as quickly as we can. And also I'm very interested in sort of working on WebKMS a little bit more. And so I just want to understand what's the sort of path for getting the existing specifications that are written in the Digital Bazaar repos moved into the CCG repos. How do we handle like archiving or cross-linking or, you know, that side of the specification stuff? And can I help with sending it back?
Okay. So we have some terms of art for what we call the various stages of a work item. So these are approved work items. So they are real projects. The editors can basically use whatever medium they want at the lowest kind of level of things. They could use Google Docs or WebMD or whatever. But once the editors feel that it's reached a certain level of maturity, they can and should move it into the CCG repo where people can see the progress and the changes. And it sounds like, given sort of the broader approval for those, that the broader community for those, it may be time to move them into things. Is there anybody from I forgot who the chairs were or the leads were for that work item? See if it says in the we should probably add that as a column in the work items thing. Action. Okay, so I added an action that we ought to add leads to the work items. Is there anybody from Digital Bazaar who wants to say anything about these and when it's time to move them formally into the community? So as a code owner, that means you are a lead, I think. So, and let me just look at the status.
So, this is Dimitri. I can bring up the subject with Manu and Dave Longley if they're not in the call. I don't think there's going to be much resistance to moving them to the CCG.
Okay. So, Ori, you wouldn't have been added as co-owner if you weren't one of the leads. So, clearly, as soon as you and if there are any other leads want to move it, go ahead and do it. As Dimitri said, I'm going to actually add that as an action. Action at Dimitri to ask. Okay. Any other questions in regards to those two work items? Okay, so any other work items, leads, et cetera, that want to say anything about their progress or they're needing help or volunteers?
Yeah.
Joe, go ahead.
I was just scanning through it and realized, some of these we can move on. So the use cases, the did use case work item, we're done with that. That's become a did working group item. I believe the did explainer is currently also handed to the did working group and temporarily on pause while the did core advances a little further, based on my comment, the what I've heard from Dan about that.
Okay, so who's going to do that? Is that you for the use cases?
Well, I am curious, what does do that mean? So the use cases has been formally handed over. I'm not sure what the process is around updating this document with our work items. So I think the document's just out of date. The use cases have been formally moved on.
I mean, I think what I mean is that the we need to basically say this is an historical item. You turn on, point people to the actual item and turn on deprecate, and not deprecate, it's archive, I think, so people can't submit stuff there, and then change any references to it in various places that, you know, hey, we're done. If the working group has taken it over, this is a, we can add it to our success list. So are you up for, since you did the, you were lead on the, one of the leads on the DID use cases, are you up for wrapping that up?
I am. I still don't know how to do it, but I'll talk with you offline. Because there is a new, there's a completely new repo, right? It's not a moving of this one over. You can help me with the GitHub logistics,
yeah,
I'll take on the assignment for that.
Sure. Do we have that as an action? Yeah, there it is. Okay. We'll puzzle that out and maybe document for others, you know, that in a sense, that's the success point of many of our work items is that they are taken over by another working group or the ITF or any other standards body to move forward. So we should have a little bit of checklist that everybody can use when they all hopefully reach that point. Okay, and then the other one was, Joe, what was the other one that was, who was lead on the other one that you said was old?
The other one was a did explainer.
I'm not
right,
sure.
So that's the report. That's the report that the security group at W3C needed to have.
Yeah, the tag.
The tag, right. So, Dan, do you have any? I don't remember who the lead on that was, but I thought it was Dan.
Yeah, well, Dan and I were working on it together around the time the working group got chartered, because we had thought it might be useful for the chartering process, but that didn't happen. I think for good reasons, it wasn't needed, and it was the wrong format. Tag didn't do a review of the charter, but I think we sort of have some of the same questions as it did use cases. And that, you know, the work has moved to a different place, and we need to put a pointer over to that new place.
Okay. So I've just added that as another action item. Okay, so moving, you know, if other people can take a look at this list, especially if you're on one of these groups, and if you think that, you know, we're done or close to being done, I'd love to hear from you. If you think it ought to be closed, we have more working. Part of the reason why we have a working group process or work item process for approving items and moving them forward, whatever, is that we have too many and we need to close some. So, You know, at some point we don't hear from the leads about an item for too long of a time. We'll put in a 30 days and say we either need a new lead or we're basically going to archive and close this as a work item. So this is a strong more than hint that if you want some of your work to not move off into the sort of deprecated or archived land, we need to hear from you or finish. Any questions at this point? The queue is empty. Any other work item related discussions? Okay, I will switch hats to BTCR.
Ori's on the queue, by the way.
Oh, Chris. Oh, I didn't see it. Okay.
He hopped on right at the tail end there. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Just as you asked. So there's been some discussion on a DIDKey issue regarding basically augmenting DID documents with signed matrix parameter values. I think we can provide the GitHub link to the thread. And I just wanted to raise it because it seems to be a thing that's sort of recurring across a number of different DID methods in a number of different ways. Basically, the problem is that DID documents, when they are first created, often don't have all of the information that you want them to have. And so very often you will create a DID, and then you'll perform an update like subsequent to its creation. And that update in many cases is expensive. It involves spending time on a blockchain or waiting some amount of time before the first one is created before you can even do an update. And so this proposal around using matrix parameters to augment the DID document is basically a way of saying, as part of the resolution process, I'm going to consider these matrix parameters as a DID method. And once I've resolved the DID document using the traditional approach, I will then look at the matrix parameters that are appended to it. And I may decide to inject properties into the DID document that are signed matrix parameters. And this would be very helpful for a number of DID methods, one being DIDKey, because DIDKey has sort of a static definition of document attribute. So this would allow you to sign an attribute and extend a DID key, DID document with, for example, service endpoints. For DID peer, a similar type of approach, because did peer dids are not by default resolvable globally in any way. So this would be a way of basically, instead of passing a did document along with a did, which is very often the case for did peer, you could just make a did URI that would contain the did document. For Sidetree, a similar type of issue around having a did that is instantly resolvable when it's created. So I just wanted to raise this issue, and if you have comments or feedback on it, I'd love to add your voice to the discussion.
Great. And actually, this is related to mine, but let me make sure there's not anything else on the queue. So I have been making some progress on BTCR. BTCR is the Bitcoin-based DID method. So we've been implementing it with an iPhone mobile app, and we have some beginning of some tools and some tooling. Now, our biggest problem at this point is we're kind of stalled on, you know, a non-JavaScript-based signing library, because almost everything Bitcoin and phone and such is, you know, we're using is C or C++. So we've been working on other aspects, and we too have been, you know, trying to puzzle through this early generation process. So like DID key, you begin with a public and private key pair. Generally, you don't register it, although theoretically, I guess we could use DID key at that particular point. But then it's put on the blockchain, and for anywhere from 10 minutes, which is supposed to be the average, to an hour, we don't actually have a DID URL, because we have to know what block the transaction is in, and that's not a deterministic amount of time. It can be up to 2 hours. So there's that interim time that you of a delay there, and then even at that point, all you have is a single key in the blockchain that is registered and timestamped. And now you need to go out to what we call a DID extension document to do things to override the implicit DID that the blockchain gives you. So what do I mean by override? Well, a DID extension, so we create a DID implicitly based on the blockchain information, and you can do a lot with that. But the, you know, since we only have one key, that one key has to be able to do everything. Or Joe has been thinking maybe it at least, you know, by default has to do delegation. And then when we extend the DID document, which can either be from an op return or some other pointer to where the DID document in the blockchain, or could be passed along in a DID peer-like fashion with the other documents that are being attested to, that DID extension document will do things like say, oh, well, you know, we said that the master key in the blockchain can do everything, but in fact, we only want to use it for delegation. We want you to use these other keys for signing, for all the other proof purposes. We want to use other keys. So we don't quite know how to do that, and we're running into sort of JSON-LD and open world questions on, you know, you might actually end up getting different DID getting different DID extensions depending on who you are and what your privileges are. So this means that, is it really a DID document? I think was one of the questions that Joe asked. You know, when we are, you know, adding keys and adding endpoints and adding other things with these extension documents, you know, his argument was maybe it isn't a DID document, and that the only DID document is that very simple one, which is the one key that can do everything. I don't know. So we're kind of getting a little over our heads, especially in the JSON-LD side of this equation, and we had hoped at rebooting to dive into this and see if we could solve of them, but since rebooting has been canceled, unless we do a virtual event, you know, we're looking for advice, and it sounds like there's some polarity, or not polarity, some commonality of some of these questions. So returning to, I'm taking my hat off as a lead, one of the leads on BTCR, and back to the CCG. Dimitri, you're first.
So just to add to the discussion, so what's being proposed is a way to extend the trust model of simple embedded methods like DidKey and DidEther to pass in essentially a JSON patch document. So you're giving the DID URL itself, which contains the public key, and then using some parameters that we've yet to determine, whether matrix or query or whatever other mechanism, you're essentially saying to resolver, when you create a DID document out of this key, please also add or remove the following fields signed by the private key, that is the key itself. So, and as Ori and Christopher mentioned, this actually solves a number of use cases for DidKey, for DidEther, for possibly DidPeer, DidBTCR, like Christopher described, and it may resolve some of Daniel Buckner's initial values use case.
So a question for you, which, you know, you guys had said, well, maybe this ought to be in the matrix parameter when you present the DID, whereas in mine, I was thinking it is something that, you know, you throw into, say, the verifiable presentation along with all of the other verifiable credentials that you're wanting to have verified. So it'd be another object in there that, you know, the verifier could know that, you know, hey, this is a place I can, you know, the verifiable presentation is a place that I can use to get these other patches, these be it DID to extension documents. Any thoughts there?
I mean, that's a good sort of expansion of the use case. You should definitely add it to that issue.
Okay, which issue? And I'll do.
It's number five. I'll repost it. It is this here.
There. Okay. Okay. So I've added it to. I'll add later a thing on it. Question. Okay. That already did Dimitri. Jonathan.
It doesn't sound like encryption really is on the table, but is there the concern is that you really don't want to have the same signing key or the encryption key, but is that the same thing for HD wallets where actually like you have all still a derived key that you're leaking?
Oh, no. Yeah. Yes. So there's a bunch of things here. Yes. You know, BTCR has at least a desire that A, you might be able to not actually pass a public key. You would pass a XPub, which then allows you to use different pub keys, only knowing the path for potentially every time you sign. We don't quite know how to do that, but that is potentially there. But also that in order to get a DID extension document, you may have to prove a capability in order to get it, or use a new type of thing we're in the process of inventing, which is a cryptographic capability where you have to exercise the mathematical assertions to prove that you have the capabilities to do it, and that will allow you to decrypt it without phoning home to the issuer of the capability. So there are lots of interesting problem spaces there. But yeah, the DID BTCR is really intended around the more private and secure and encrypted and non-correlatable as we can, without necessarily going to selective disclosure. Joe, go ahead.
Okay, so there are at least three different amalgam patterns that we're talking about here. The first one is how I would refer to yours, Chris, is which is you've got a DID and a DID document, and in the DID document you want to specify, hey, there's some more stuff that's anchored in the authority of this DID, and you should go interpret it in a smart way. And whether that's how BTCR does it, or it's in a separate communications channel to say, hey, here's my DID, and then here's some delegations signed by that DID. Those are both, in my view, the same amalgam. The second one is the initial state use case, which I believe I understand Daniel Buchner's advocacy around side tree, where the identifier itself of the DID is verifiable based on that initial state. So you have a cryptographic verifiability that initial state was, in fact, this identifier. And if I misinterpret that, please correct me. The third pattern is that at DID author time, I mean, not DID document time, but the DID URL author time, the desire to augment the DID document in that DID URL with some JSON patch. And I actually feel this last one is almost certainly an anti-pattern, because it breaks the notion that what you get back from DID resolution is authentic. Because now you're having a different step in which multiple different quote-unquote authentic DID documents could manifest from different DID URLs with different JSON passes. So that feels broken. The initial state felt like it was deterministic and closed loop, and I could see how that's maybe a shortcut. But I just want to call out those three patterns.
Okay. Ori.
Yeah, I think the separation into the three buckets is extremely helpful. So I totally agree with what you just said, Joe. Initially, I was going to comment on encryption. You know, for DID key, there is support for encryption built in. For other DID methods like DID ETHR, there might not be. Basically, the method itself is responsible for returning the DID document, and the method authors are responsible for doing that in a way that they think is best reflective of the security and privacy principles that they believe in. You know, for example, people building DID web can decide to use DNS and HTTP, and people who really don't believe in that can decide that they don't want to do that at all. So I think for the case of DID key and for DID ETHR, both of those identifiers are fixed in a public key. And it's the case that if that public key is compromised, every variation of that DID document forever will always be compromised. And so I don't actually see a big difference in augmenting a DID document signed patches from that key, because it's effectively the same as losing control of the private key. They're the same thing. The URL, if you inject properties into the DID document with the URL, it's just the same as being able to sign updates to that DID method with a private key.
Okay. Dimitri, can you keep your comment short, because we're at the end of the time? It sounds like this is a topic we should continue on, because it crosses multiple things. Go ahead, Dimitri.
Agreed. Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think that the three categories are equivalent. And what we're talking about is, for the third one, is a signed JSON patch, signed by the same authority, by the same private key as the initial one. So in that way, it is deterministic. But I agree, discussion should continue.
Okay, so we will continue that discussion. Also, I have an offer if anybody wants a establishing DID transaction with all the keys and a real testnet thing. I have this little one-page thing that my app produces that has the hexes and the QR codes for every single thing you need for an establishing BTCR transaction that is properly registered on testnet. And if you give me an optional short, you know, less than 80 character URL, I can also point that to one of those three forms, which is the DID extension. So, which has still been puzzled out what that should look like at the other end of that URL. So all you need to do is give me that URL and I will be glad to send you your own test BTCR establishing. Okay, we have to go. Thank you very much and have a good week.
Thanks.